because it is absolutely astounding. That is it from me. Thank you so much. Thanks as ever for the team for putting this together and guiding us through it. I will hand you over to Dotton the Night Watchman, and I'll see you on Drive next Monday. It's all yours, Dotton.
Johnny, thank you very much. Tonight on the Nightclub, we want to hear about your pinch yourself moments. You know, the moments when you couldn't believe you were there with that person. What's your pinch yourself moment?
The UK and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 1 o'clock. This is Charlotte Simpson. World leaders are expressing growing concern about the danger of a regional war in the Middle East following intensifying cross-border fire between Israel and the Iranian-backed group Hezbollah in Lebanon. President Biden says the United States will do everything in its power to prevent a wider war. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has warned Hezbollah it faces more attacks unless it backs down. Speaking at a UN summit, the Israeli ambassador Danny Dannon insisted that Israel wanted to avoid a wider conflict.
Let me be clear. We are a peaceful nation. We do not seek war, nor do we desire it. However, we will not stand by as our people are attacked. We will use all means at hand, our determination, our innovation, and our strength to protect our people.
Rachel Reeves will promise to deliver a budget to rebuild Britain in her speech to the Labour Party conference in Liverpool today. But the Chancellor's key message risks being overshadowed by the government's decision to axe the winter fuel payment for 10 million pensioners, with a vote challenging the move expected on the conference floor. Our political correspondent Alex Forsyth says the Chancellor is under pressure to deliver some better news.
What will be interesting to see is whether there's any shift in that narrative, any more optimism from the Chancellor. I think what we're going to hear from the government is them trying to explain more why they are doing what they are doing, because there is a sense among some that perhaps they've been a little too gloomy in their outlook. So, yes, Rachel Reeves, the big centrepiece speech of the conference tomorrow, followed by the Prime Minister on Tuesday.
Sri Lanka's presidential election has been won by the leftist anti-corruption candidate Nura Kumaradesanayake. The poll, which went to a second count for the first time in Sri Lanka's history, was described as one of the country's closest. New figures show fuel prices are falling faster than at any other point in 2024 so far, with the average price for petrol and diesel across forecourts nearly 7p per litre cheaper than a month ago. The drop in price, which now stands at the lowest level in almost 3 years, is being attributed to a fall in oil prices and the strength of the pound against the US dollar. Nearly 200,000 motorcyclists have had their helmets blessed at a Catholic shrine in Portugal. The event, called the Blessing of the Helmets, takes place every year, as Kat Fina reports.
The event at the Our Lady of Fatima Roman Catholic Shrine attracts devotees from all over Portugal. Bikers, young and old, men and women, many of them clad in leather, held up thousands of helmets to be blessed during Sunday's Mass. Some come to pray for protection, others to remember those killed or injured on the roads. According to national data, there were nearly 9,000 motorcycle accidents in Portugal last year. The Patriarch of Lisbon, Rui Valério, paid special tribute to the Portuguese firefighters engaged in combating recent devastating wildfires.
BBC News, it's 3 minutes past one.
This week on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Tomorrow at 7.45, Newcastle United travel to AFC Wimbledon in the EFL Cup. And Five Sports Extra has ball-by-ball coverage of England versus Australia in the third ODI. And tonight from 7, join Mark Chapman for the Monday Night Club.
Evening, welcome along to 5 Live Sports.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate. Plus, see our privacy notice. bbc.co.uk/5live.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Dotton Adebayo. BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, good morning and welcome to another week of nightclubs here on BBC Radio 5 Live. I'm your night watchman, Dotton. If you'd like to join in the conversation, it would be absolutely amazing to have your contributions, or we can just have a chin wag if you fancy, on 08085 909 693. That's the number to call. Let's talk. 08085909693. If you can't call, that's cool. You can text me on 85058 or you can email Dotun, D-O-T-U-N at bbc.co.uk. And let's start with the advice that you'd give the Prime Minister. He's in something of a hole. That's to put it mildly, because this week, of course, sees the Liverpool Labour Party conference going on in Liverpool. It's already underway. The Prime Minister will speak in a couple of days' time, and he's got to dig himself out of a hole, because no matter what he wants to say, he doesn't seem to be able to shift the narrative over the last week of well, the narrative of sleaze, to put it mildly, particularly around the row over donated gifts, whether it be football tickets or fashion wear. That just is clinging to this conference despite all his other best efforts, or the Chancellor will try her hand with her best effort tomorrow or later on today. And of course, yesterday, Angela Rayner, the Deputy Prime Minister, tried as well to shift the dial, as it were, but hasn't been able to so far. So what does the Prime Minister need to do to get the conference back on track, is my question. Help him out if you can. I know you're not getting paid his wages. No, come on. This is the BBC after all. How do you dig yourself out of a hole? Or should that be, how did you dig yourself out of a hole? Did you apologise? Did you say, I'm sorry? It won't happen again, that kind of thing. Did it work? Or do you double down and face your critics? Do you say, look, this is a hole that I'm in, but it's not one that I've dug. You're digging me in this hole deeper and deeper and deeper, whereas I'm trying to tell you what the policy for our government will be this autumn and the whole of this year. 08085909693. That's quite a political conundrum. Any advice you can give the Prime Minister, I'm sure he will be listening and be very grateful for. Also, I want to hear tonight about your pinch yourself moments, for want of a better way of describing them. You know, when you have to pinch yourself to convince yourself that this is real, this is really happening. I am in this room right now with the most unbelievable great and the good of the world, you know, that kind of thing. 08085909693. You know the moment when you think, is this really happening? Or am I dreaming? So you literally have to pinch yourself to know that, oh, ouch, that it's real. And you ask yourself, oh my goodness, how did I end up here? Those are pinch yourself moments. We've all had them. What was your pinch yourself moment? We'll later on in the programme bring you the latest episode of Americast from BBC Sounds. And in it, you'll hear from a man called Bill Gage, who used to be part of the Secret Service protecting the US president. And he shared this particular pinch yourself moment.
I went to Afghanistan once with the president, President Obama. And my CAT team had been up for like 36 hours straight. And another team relieved us. And there's always a backup plane. A backup Air Force One that flies everywhere with the president in case there's a problem with the primary plane. And we were lucky enough to fly back on the backup plane. And it was just my CAT team, just like six or seven of us and nobody else on the plane. And we got airborne. And one of the flight attendants came back and said, listen, there was kind of a mess up. We have a bunch of Buffalo hot wings and a bunch of ice cold Yingling beer. And we kind of got to get rid of it before we land in Germany. And so we
managed to.
We ate all these Buffalo wings, drank Yingling. And a kind of a dirty little secret is, on the presidential planes, the president has access to movies that haven't been released yet into Hollywood. So a president gets them like several weeks before they're actually released. So we were able to watch all these movies that hadn't even been released yet. So there were moments like that in the Secret Service that I remember, just kind of these like, wow, this is a really cool job.
Well, you would, wouldn't you? You would. And what amused me about that was it was the buffalo wings that made him pinch himself, you know. It was the fact that he could watch movies that hadn't been released yet. Those were his pinch yourself moments. I mean, for you and I, it might be the fact that we're on the same plane or even the plane behind the President of the United States. That might have been a pinch yourself moment. So what was a pinch yourself moment for you? 08085 909693. The moment when you couldn't believe this was really happening to you. Yeah, you thought you were dreaming, but no, it's a pinch yourself moment. And I want to hear your reunion stories. I swear to you, this happened to me earlier on my All England show that happens between 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock of a Sunday evening. I had my very own reunion story live on air when a caller who seemed very familiar phoned in.
Good evening, Dustin. How are you?
I'm very well. I should explain to people how we know each other.
If you will, that would be great. Yes, please.
Yeah, you and I were neighbours. We lived literally two doors apart, yeah?
That's right, yes.
And we haven't spoken for over 20 years.
Absolutely, that's true, yes.
That is absolutely amazing. First of all, tell me, was this just coincidence that you happened upon me on the radio?
We are driving on the M1, not driving, so I could safely talk to you. We just dropped our daughter to uni, and we turned the TV to keep us, you know, going to the element. And then we heard your voice, and I'm like, I know this voice. I know it. And then that's how I realized who you are, and we were just thrilled to hear you.
Yeah, that happened to me tonight. I could tell you more about that story. Those are my neighbours, and she called up because we were talking about climbing a mountain, and she reminded listeners that I once chased a robber, a house burglar, from their house when they were away. And it's a funny story. It's a hilarious story. But you can listen again on BBC Sounds if you go to Dotton between, gosh, it must have been about 7 or 8 o'clock this evening, yesterday evening as it is now. You'll find it's a hilarious story. If I've got time, I'll tell you the hilarious story because it is worth hearing. But if I've got time during the conversation tonight, I will tell you. But I've had my reunion. What about you? So, what's your reunion story? What's your story of being back in contact with somebody after years, surprisingly or otherwise, whether it be a school reunion, family reunion, work reunion, ex reunion, dare I ask, and, you know, general friends reunited reunions. What's yours? 08085 909693. And Yeah, that's right. Strictly is back. So I want to know if you've taken up dancing recently, if you've been influenced by Strictly to maybe do a two-step at home in the privacy of your own home in front of the mirror. Be honest now. How did you do? I've got to ask. 08085 909693. And what puts you in that kind of dancing mood? Something like this? This one always puts me in a dancing mood. I don't know why. It puts me right there. Ask my missus, honestly.
I'm in a dancing mood, baby now. I'm in a dancing mood.
That's right.
I'm in a dancing mood. When you feel the beat, you got to move your feet. You got to clap your way.
That's what you do. You move your feet when you feel the beat.
You got all the soul deep down inside. Cause you get
up. So, I'm telling you Now, this is what puts me in a dancing mood. You might want to tell me what puts you in a dancing mood. It doesn't have to be music. It could just be the fact that Strictly is back on our tellies. And, of course, we want to do the Fandango. But sometimes in the privacy of our own homes, sometimes we take it out there and rock it. And what about the dancing classes? Anybody join any dancing classes inspired by what's going on the telly? Those are the questions I'm asking you tonight. 08085909693. If you can help out the Prime Minister by suggesting how you get yourself out of a hole the size of a Labour Party conference, and to move on from the stories of donations that you may or may not have accepted, that kind of thing. 08085909693. What's your pinch yourself moment? What's the moment that you had to pinch yourself because you couldn't quite believe it was happening to you? 08085909693. And your reunion stories. I had an amazing reunion on the radio earlier on this evening, and I generally, it was completely made up. When I saw this woman was calling, well, they had to tell me what the story was. She claimed she was my neighbour, it said initially, and I said, yeah, that sounds like my neighbour. If it was that story about me, not quite catching the burglars, but at least saving them from having all of their possessions stolen. I mean, the burglar was amazing. If you can talk of burglars in that way, they had taken every single thing out of their house, including the contents of their refrigerator, the refrigerator itself, their shoes, everything. And, you know, she told this story on air tonight. What a reunion, eh? Have you had one like that yourself? Not exactly like that, obviously. What's the reunion that you'd like to tell us about? 08085909693. Obviously, the questions will be whether the reunion caught you by surprise, whether it was an accident, or it was a planned reunion, and also, what was it like? Because, you know, not all reunions end up all, you know, roses and whatnots. And also, what happens to put you in a dancing mood to do, well, not necessarily the Fandango. I was thinking we could dance like this tonight. You know the fun? Yeah, let's dance the night away tonight. This is, after all, the nightclub on BBC Radio 5 Live. And we're just preempting Strictly, because we can dance too.
Here comes my happiness again.
In a matter of speaking, yeah.
With senoritas who can sway.
Yeah, whoever, not necessarily senoritas who can sway.
Right now, tomorrow's looking bright.
It is. Well, there'll probably be a lot of rain as well.
Just like the sunny morning light.
Right, okay, so we're going to dance the night away, yeah? And also, one more thing. Do you remember last week we were talking about organ transplants? Remember when I talked about my wife's godson, who was about to have a kidney transplant? And many of you shared your transplant stories with me as well, for which I was so very grateful. Anyway, as far as, and it's all fingers crossed, still touch wood, obviously, because he had the transplant, well, just a week ago now. He's come through it okay so far, but of course they're watching him closely because they have to make sure that the organ is not rejected. And, after that, there's a long road to recovery as well. Let's be real. But this week, coincidentally, is organ donation week. So I've been finding out more about the NHS blood and transplant service works and hearing in particular from Natalie, who received a double lung transplant.
Very scary time for us all, for my mum and dad and my children, all the family and friends. Everybody was very worried about me, really hopeful that we get a transplant, but maybe a difficult situation to be in, because obviously I had to wait, sadly, for someone to pass away so that I could have a second chance at life. So it's an incredible experience to go through, really. But yeah, very scary, very, very grateful as well at the same time.
How do you come to terms with that bittersweet set of circumstances? Very, you know, rewarding for you to be offered this transplant and for it to be successful, but also sad for another family who are, you know, happy to have the organs donated to you, but extremely sad because they've lost a loved one.
Yeah, I guess I just tried to live each day to the fullest, to make my donor proud, to make her family proud, and just make as many memories with my children as I can. And I hope that she's looking down proud that I've been, you know, she's given me her lungs. I'm just so grateful to her. And words can't really express how thankful and how grateful we all are to my donor and her family for saving my life. And we think about her all the time. And on our anniversary, you know, we remember her every day with everything that we do, every extra birthday that I see, that my children see, Christmases. I'm just so thankful that I've been able to watch my children grow up thanks to her. And I hope she would be proud.
Isn't that an inspirational story? It was so inspirational talking to Natalie there, I can't tell you. Yes, and we'll hear more from her later on today's programme. Talking about pinch-yourself moments, my listener says, I had cocktails with Paul Weller and Steve Craddock in the Fairmont Hotel ahead of their Dubai gig. Couldn't believe it. Great guys. Well, you should hope so. I mean, Paul Weller, come on now. It's got to be a great guy, isn't he? Yeah, that's a pinch-yourself moment. Now, I'm not showing off, but I've got a pinch-yourself moment with Paul Weller, and that was when my daughters were actually at the same sort of infant school or primary school, maybe it was primary school, junior school by then, as Paul Weller's daughter and Noel Gallagher's daughter. This is a true story. So Paul Weller used to rock up in a racing green Mini, and he'd always rock up like at 9 o'clock in the morning, dropping his daughter off, looking like a rock star that had been up all night, if you know what I mean. He was, yeah, genuinely, like jeans jacket and all of that sort of stuff. Noel Gallagher used to rock up. I can't remember what car he was rocking at the time, but he used to rock up, and again, like a rock star that shouldn't be up at 9 o'clock in the morning. That was a true story. And look, I'm not a celebrity. I haven't got the kind of money they've got, anything like that. But it was just coincidentally that my daughters went to the same junior school. Yeah, it became a bit of a pop star one, that. So it was a pinch yourself moment when the first time I saw Paul Weller, I was like, Anyway, we've got Nikki with us in Norfolk. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Dolphin. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you for calling. First caller of the day. Really appreciate it.
Gosh, didn't know that.
Yeah, first caller of the day. We've spoken before anyway, haven't we, Nikki? We've spoken before.
We have indeed, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because, you know, I was tempted to press that button, but I'm not going to. You know the button I mean.
Yes, no, it's not. I'm not first time.
Yeah. You listen keenly. But you have had a pinch-yourself moment, I hear.
Yes, my husband was decorated by the Queen.
Oh,
and we had to go. Well, we didn't know it would be the Queen. It could have been another member of the royal family.
Yes, yes.
I was hoping it would be the Queen. So
yes.
We went to Buckingham Palace.
Yes.
So sweeping into those gates in a taxi was just amazing for a start.
It was, yeah. Going past the policeman.
Oh, it was just amazing. I couldn't believe it. Then we went in and we climbed up these very grand staircases.
Yes, yes.
People in uniform and everything. It was lovely.
Yes.
And then when he was decorated, I it was like a little dream. I couldn't believe it.
It's a proud moment, isn't it? It's a very proud, proud moment.
I was very proud of him.
And it's a moment where, for some reason, I got an MBE once for my
friends. And so you were decorated by the Queen?
No, by Princess Anne. only got Princess Anne. The Queen was in the Caribbean. I had to ask, excuse me, where is Her Majesty?
Princess Anne is lovely.
But, no, I didn't have a problem with that at all. But the woman that was sitting next to me, because, you know, you go through this, you're in the galleries, you know, the spectators sort of side of things. But those of us who get the gong are sitting in chairs, you know, rows of chairs on the ground, as it were, on the main floor, just in front of the, you know, the royal and the little platform that they stand on. And the woman next to me got a gong. I don't know what she got, MBE, OBE. She was sitting next to me and she started crying. And I said, well, why are you crying? And she said, I was thinking of my mother who would have loved this experience. And she set me off because, you know, I'd lost my mother as well. And, you know, the people that would appreciate, for some reason, you sit there and you start thinking about the people who would have enjoyed that moment the most. I did, in any case. And it was quite emotional. I didn't expect it to be emotional. I didn't expect it at all to be emotional. How was it for your husband, though? Did he handle it well?
Yes, he did. He was very calm, thank goodness. And he, yes, it was a big occasion. He got it for sort of flying. He was a member of the Red Arrows, you probably remember.
Of course.
I think you had a long talk to him.
Oh, wow. Did I? I had a talk with him.
Found a member of the Red Arrows.
Oh, wow. Okay, I do remember that. I do remember that.
Remember?
And so does one of my colleagues, our studio director tonight, remembers it as well.
Yes, he's since died. Actually, he died last month, which was awful. But he was 90, so he didn't make it any easier for me. But nevertheless, it was pretty good innings, as they say.
Of course. But how are you coping?
Well, my dog looks after me.
Good, good.
My beautiful German Shepherd.
Good. And you've looked after your dog, so it's only fair that your dog looks after you now.
He certainly does. He was a nursemaid to Henry when he was very ill. Mm. And if he made a slight wrong move, Max was there, like a little nurse. And he really was. I mean, it was quite outstanding. And he hasn't shown any signs of upset, except he's very clingy. I mean, he's with me now, sitting as far as he can on my knee, but he's very clingy, wants to know where I am all the time. But that's the only signs he has. And, of course, I've got two lovely boys and a big grandson, so I'm ever so lucky.
Did you... And by the way, I'm not showing off, but I've got a little more intimate memory of Buckingham Palace because I've been there, I think, twice. And
really?
This is absolutely true. I keep saying it's a true story because it sounds unbelievable. I once, in 1999, I got a card inviting me to Buckingham Palace. This was before I got the MBE in 2008. In 1999, I got an invite to go to Buckingham Palace and I didn't know why I was being invited to Buckingham Palace. I didn't know who had sent it. I didn't know what I'd done to get an invite to Buckingham Palace. But, you know, you get an invite to Buckingham Palace, you don't ask questions, do you?
No, you just ask why.
You just show up, exactly. And the amazing thing was, I thought right up to the gate where the policeman lets you behind, you know, the walls or the gates of Buckingham Palace, right up to the gate, I thought, I'm going to be rumbled. They're going to rumble me. So I was a bit nervous because, you know, there are tourists outside the gate and they're looking over and see you stroll in. And you're thinking any moment now, the policeman's going to, you know, lift my collar and say, not you.
But they didn't.
They didn't, because they give you this pass, and I don't know, you know, the invite has a sort of like a crimson colour in one corner or something like that. So as soon as they saw that, they just waved me in. It's like they were expecting me. So anyway, I go up to, I've written about this actually, in a certain book that's out there that you can find. But anyway, I go up to, up those steps, because once you go inside, people see the facade, don't they, of Buckingham Palace?
Yeah.
But behind that facade, it's an impressive courtyard that you've got there, huge courtyard.
Very.
And yeah, I went up the stairs. They showed us where to go. And there's like 800 other people there. So I immediately felt at ease, even though I thought I'm still going to get rumbled. And then I meet this guy. This guy is from the British Telecom Steel Band. And he's like saying to me, oh, you're standing in the right place because the Queen's going to come out of those doors over there and she's going to walk past here and she's bound to talk to you. I'm still like, you know, come off it. This bloke, he's a fraud like I am. What do you mean steel band at the palace? He's as fraudulent as I am. He's bunked in. And then guess what? The Queen comes out of the said double doors that he said. She walks right up to him first and says, how's the wife and kids? I kid you not. I'm like, this boat knows the Queen. Oh, my God. And at that point, I'm paralysed. I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. You know, the Queen's going to come. I couldn't move. If I could have fled, I would have fled, but I was paralysed. And the Queen comes up to me. And, you know, the first thing I'm thinking of is, oh, gosh, you know, I wish I could check if, you know, my breath is, you know, smelling very minty and fruity. So I don't want to go too near the Queen if it's not. And then I'm trying to sort of speak to the Queen without any spittle emerging from me. So I'm standing aloof with the Queen. And she's got these courtiers around her. And one of them, they're all very tall, her courtiers. They're all about 6'4". She said, Mom. Yeah, and he had talked to us before. He said, look, if the Queen does come and talk to you, address her as Mum. Mum. And the Queen comes and talks to me. He said, Mum, may I present, you know, Mr. Adebayo or whatever? And you've got a name tag. So she says, because, you know, I was in publishing. That's how I got the MBE. And she said, oh, so what do you do? And at that time, I had a really fancy haircut with all lines across it and everything like that. And I thought, she probably won't believe me. But I said, look, I'm a book publisher. And she's like, oh, really? So, you know, where'd you do it? And I was like, oh, you know, a publishing company in London. And she's like, okay, and how's it going? And I said, oh, well, you know, it's publishing, it's all difficult and everything. She goes, well, yeah, but carry on, you know, don't give up, just, you know, keep on and et cetera. And then I remembered, I couldn't remember what to call her. When somebody says call her Mum, and I thought, was it Mum or was it Madam? So I ended up calling the late Queen Madam.
Oh, God. Oh, dear God.
Anyway, that was my pinch-yourself moment with the late Queen, and I still feel about it now. Do you keep the medal in view?
I have his medals. Well, in fact, his funeral was on the 27th of last month, so I took the flag and his hat and his medals, which were presented to me by my grandson, and I've still got them in the study. They've stayed there. I can't bear to move them at the moment.
Sure, no, I totally get that. And when you pinched yourself, did you realise it was real? Or did you still think you were dreaming?
I don't know. I felt like I was very nervous. And funnily enough, the morning that I woke up before going to the palace, I looked at myself in the mirror and my neck and my chest were covered in little tiny spots. And I said to Henry, I think I've got German measles.
Oh, oh my goodness.
I wasn't feeling ill at all. I was just glad that I'd had the children.
Yes, well, of course. And that you didn't spread the measles on to Her Majesty the Queen,
well,
I'd have thought. That's what I was thinking.
Not. I wasn't going to say anything anyhow.
You have now.
Yeah, well, she won't know now. Yeah. Were you not surprised to see how tiny she was?
I wasn't surprised about that so much. I'll tell you what I was surprised at and which I still give her a lot of respect for because, like I said, I had a haircut that looked like I was one of the riffraff on the streets, you know, the bad boys on the street. And she at that time would have been in her 80s. She felt very comfortable with speaking to a young black guy like me who looked like I was in the series Top Boy or something like that, you know. She felt really comfortable, and which shouldn't be surprising because she was head of the Commonwealth, etc. But to me, I felt I'd never had that sort of close connection with somebody of that age in Britain before, you know. And I give her the props. Yeah, why not? Why not?
She made you feel that you're special.
She did, actually. She did. Yes, and that was her gift.
It is a gift. I think her mother had it as well.
Ah, yes, of course.
The Queen with a little, always.
With a little tipple at her side.
Oh, yes. Yes, let's all have another drink.
Yes, why not? Yes. Why yes. not? And I will say this. I don't drink, really. You know, I'm not. I don't have the taste for drinking. But when you go to Buckingham Palace, you got to, because they offer you this wine. It was, even I could tell. I don't know anything about wine. I could tell it was really good. And there was this comedian, what's his name, Gary Wilmot, who was at place, and he was next to me. And I said, "Oh, this wine's quite good." And he said, "What did you expect the Queen to serve you, plonk?" That's when I realised where all our money's going to, serving some decent wine. I'm so glad, on reflection, that Sir Keir Starmer wasn't there, because, you know, they'd say all that fancy wine, free donation, you didn't declare it.
Oh, for heaven's sake, sir. Well, that's nothing, really.
That's another story,
it's just
isn't
a very, very nice gesture. How many guests could you take, Dalton? Could you take guests with you?
Not that time. That was for me. For the MBE, I was able to take, one, two, three guests, I think it was.
Oh, that was lucky, because, yes.
No, go ahead.
Well, sorry. Because I could only take one, when Henry was decorated. My mother and his father were waiting outside the actual gates for us.
Oh.
It was all right. I mean, it was very, very, you know, they were there. So we all went off to the Fulham Road and had a tandoori curry.
Why not? After you've been to Buckingham Palace, what better way of celebrating?
Absolutely. Yeah,
my younger daughter was so lucky that her grandmother wasn't in this country at the time. Otherwise, she would never have got to go, because, you know, she wouldn't have made the cut, as it were. So she's lucky. Look, I've got to leave it there, Nikki, only because I'm 5-6 minutes coming up to the news late. But never mind. Let's talk again anytime you like. If you fancy a bit of company for night time, give me a call. Yeah. And I hope you can stay strong over these difficult weeks and maybe even months. Archie and Inverness, I'll speak to you straight after the news, I promise you. News and sport, that is. It's 1:36.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News on 5 Live. World leaders are expressing growing concern about the danger of a regional war in the Middle East following intensifying cross-border fire between Israel and the Iranian-backed group Hezbollah in Lebanon. President Biden says the United States will do everything in its power to prevent a wider war. Rachel Reeves will promise to deliver a budget to rebuild Britain in her speech to the Labour Party conference in Liverpool today, but the Chancellor's key message risks being overshadowed by the government's decision to axe winter fuel payments for 10 million pensioners, with a vote challenging the move expected on the conference floor. And new figures show fuel prices are falling faster than at any point in 2024 so far, with the average price for petrol and diesel across four quarts nearly 7% or 7p per litre cheaper than a month ago. The drop in price, which now stands at the lowest level in almost 3 years, is being attributed to a fall in oil prices and the strength of the pound against the US dollar. Five Live Sport now is Andy Barwell.
It turned out to be a real battle between two great Premier League title rivals at the Etihad Stadium. Manchester City and Arsenal drew 2-2, with drama right up until the end of the game, as the BBC's football correspondent John Murray reports.
Last season's top two remained unbeaten this season after an epic in the Manchester rain, with City only avoiding their first home defeat for almost 2 years with a dramatic equaliser from substitute John Stones in the 8th minute of added time. In an incident-packed first half, Erling Haaland shot the champions into an early lead with his 100th City goal, but then they lost the mighty Rodri to injury, were incensed as Calafiori equalised on his Arsenal full debut after a quickly taken free kick, and then found themselves behind as Gabriel headed in Arsenal's second goal from a corner. Before the break, there was more drama as Arsenal's Trossard was sent off after kicking the ball away, which resulted in a second half of relentless City attack against Arsenal defence, with their resistance only broken right at the end of a truly breathless occasion.
Brighton drew 2-2 with Nottingham Forest. Both managers there were sent off late on in the game, along with the Forest player Morgan Gibbs-White. After Celtic's 5-2 victory over Falkirk in the Scottish League Cup, the Old Firm have been kept apart in the semi-finals. Celtic will take on Aberdeen, Motherwell will play Rangers. Vivian Miedema scored one goal and made another on her return to the Emirates Stadium. Manchester City drew 2-2 with their former club Arsenal in their Women's Super League opener. And Celtic beat their Ukrainian opponents 1-0 in the first leg of the Women's Champions League qualifier. The return is on Thursday, with the winner going through to the group stages. After the victory for McLaren's Lando Norris in the Singapore Grand Prix, Max Verstappen's lead in the F1 Drivers' Championship is down to 52 points with six races to go. The American Billy Horschel claimed the European Tour's PGA Championship title at Wentworth for the second time in 4 years, and they'll try again at Trent Bridge today for cricket's 50-over one-day cup final, with Somerset facing Glamorgan.
I'm Kim Cattrall, and I want to tell you about my new podcast, a new audio drama telling the history of the CIA from the inside out.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
He's got to convince Congress to give him an open checkbook now.
America has suffered its worst domestic attack of the 20th century at Pearl Harbor.
How do we make contact with the NKGB?
Central Intelligence, starring me, Kim Cattrall, Ed Harris, and Johnny Flynn.
There's $50,000 in it for you if you say yes.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
Dotun Adebayo. Listen on BBC Sounds.
08085909693 is the nightclub number. If you'd like to join us this morning, it would be an absolute pleasure having you with us. So we're talking about, amongst other things, pinch yourself moments. We just heard from our caller about pinch yourself moment at Buckingham Palace. Well, you would, wouldn't you? I mean, Her Majesty the Queen, as she was, suddenly she's in the room. You got to pinch yourself. That kind of thing. 08085909693. What was your pinch yourself moment? Also, we've been asking for reunion stories. I had an amazing reunion on the radio earlier on. And what about you? Have you ever come across somebody that you hadn't seen for a while and it was a reunion, whether it be school, work, friendship reunion, romantic reunion, whatever it might be? Easy on the romantic reunions, you know what I mean? But whatever it is, yeah, talk to me about the reunion. And also, if there's a dancing mood kind of song that you want to tell us about, because you see, Strictly's back. But I should warn you, before you start dancing, have a listen.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee waltz when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced her to my loved one, and while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me.
Yeah, let that be a lesson to you. If you're thinking of dancing, yeah, if you're thinking of following in the Strictly mode, just stick to the dancing, if you don't mind. Don't be inviting your friends to dance with your loved one. You know, you never know. I'm just saying, this is a lesson to be learned. Patty Page will tell you all about that. So if you've started dancing as a result of Strictly, if you've been influenced, whether you've started taking dancing classes, if you started going out dancing, or indeed you just save your dancing for those moments in front of the mirror, yeah, well, why not? You know what I mean? Give me a call, 08085 909693. Oh yeah, one more thing we've been asking about. Advice for Sir Keir Starmer. He's in a spot of trouble as far as the Labour Party conference is concerned. There might be a rebellion going on with regards to winter fuel allowances, but also about free donations, yeah? So how does he dig himself out of that when he wants to actually talk about the policy that they've got planned for us in the coming year or so? Archie in Inverness, that's what you wanted to talk about. Good morning, by the way.
Yeah, good morning, Dalton. Thanks very much. Yeah, about Starmer being in the hole, advice to him. An obvious piece of advice would have been not to have got himself into that hole in the first place.
Yes, of course. But sometimes when you're looking up at the stars, you could just fall into a hole that you weren't even expecting would be there, you know?
Well, it's interesting you say looking up into the stars, Don, because Well, I think the Starmer is. Remember, Michelle Obama is famous for saying, when they go low, we go high.
Yes, indeed. Very famous quote. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, from where I stand, Keir Starmer's attitude is, when they go low, we go lower.
Why'd you say that? You can't go any lower. How low can you go?
Well, there were two very early indications, but there was something you said on Friday. I apologise for doing this, Dawn. It's a very
That's
bad habit
right. I've got
for
doing. Right.
I've got a long memory for things.
That's right.
10 to 3 on Friday, you were discussing Keir Starmer and the Arsenal situation. And you were speaking to a caller, and you said about the hospitality of the Arsenal situation, this isn't a moral question, and I'm not sure if I'm qualified to answer moral questions. Do you remember saying that, Don?
I believe I could have said something like that. I don't remember straight off, but I wouldn't be surprised if I said something like that.
If it's not a moral question, then what is it?
It could be a straight transaction question, because what the Prime Minister is saying, that the tickets was a kind of a reimbursement to the British public, because it would have cost us a lot more money if we had had to pay for his security if he was sitting in the stalls. So is it a moral question? Maybe it is. But like I say, I'm not necessarily qualified for a moral question. But as a transactional question, I think it's very much easier to draw a line on it and say these kind of transactions do not or should not be accepted.
Well, about Starmer going lower, I'm sure you remember.
So what was the point you were trying to make about the moral one, though, before we lose sight of that, as you brought it up? What was the point you wanted to make?
Okay, well, when Keir Starmer was across Italy recently speaking to controversial policies about dealing with asylum seekers and immigrant labour and stuff, he said, and I heard him on the radio say this, he said, it's good to get back to good old-fashioned British pragmatism. Now, I never knew there was such a thing as good old-fashioned British pragmatism, and I always thought it'd be a good idea if we got back to good old-fashioned British principle, because we have to act in principles, not pragmatism. But pragmatism is what absolutely stained Blair and they created Corbyn.
You could argue that. You could argue that, but you could say principles as well, couldn't you? You could substitute pragmatism for principles. But pragmatism, you know, is not necessarily a sort of uniquely British thing, though, is it?
Pragmatism,
for me, in my mind, means that, look, let's be sensible about this, if you like. Pragmatism is a kind of, you know, sensible or sensibility around a question of something. Let's not be flippant, or let's not be extravagant or whatever. Let's be pragmatic. Why is that not British? It's not uniquely so, but why would you have a quarrel with that?
Well, I think it's good to hold to principles. I mean, the British thing is a bit of a red herring. It's not so much getting back to British principles.
Yeah,
it's just
right,
getting back
it's
to principles.
Yeah.
Somebody once said that politics is the art of the possible, and that's fair enough. The art of the possible, absolutely, but within the parameters of solid ethics. I mean, we have 10 commandments. I mean, I'm sure all other religions have approximately the same tenets as well. I mean, don't kill each other, for Pete's sake. You know?
Rules. Yeah, the commandments
are rules, exactly.
Aren't they? By which
and there are rules
life.
That you don't do.
Yeah.
And a classic one, an early indicator of what he was going to do. And Farage, when Farage got voted in as an MP, I'm not a supporter of Farage, incidentally. I'm an actual Labour supporter, but I haven't voted Labour and I can't remember how long. Mm-hmm. But Farage said in his acceptance speech when he got voted as an MP, he said that Starmer is going to hit red choppy waters very, very quickly. And he absolutely has. Mm-hmm. An early indicator for Starmer was when Stephen Flynn of the SNP was wanting to ceasefire in the Middle East. Look at where the Middle East now is. Absolutely on the brink. Mm-hmm. Months ago, Stephen Flynn wanted to debate a ceasefire. And what happened to Keir Starmer? He went and he had a cosy wee chat with the Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle, to scupper
Stephen Flynn. I do remember that. Okay.
That is as dirty as they get, Don.
Well, you're absolutely within your rights to regard it as such. You know that I can't possibly comment on that. But this, I will ask of you though. You know, the thing that strikes me with the Prime Minister's the hole that he's got to dig himself out of over the next couple of days, with regards to, you know, giving his speech at the party conference when all around him are in revolt. The thing I don't get is these people make out like they're a lot cleverer than we are. Or at least they've got every right to rule over us because, you know, they've been to Oxford or whatever it might be. And I look and I think, well, I'm not sending any of my kids to Oxford because you lot, we were saying, our listeners were saying 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, no, with regards to the winter fuel payments, the removal of the winter fuel payments, we knew this was coming. It didn't take a genius. Didn't take a genius. You know, I went to lowly University of Essex. You know, I didn't have to go to Oxford to be able to see that. And yet they seem to stumble from one calamity to another. They're not as clever as they think they are.
But that's the whole point, though. The whole point is, and this is exactly why they don't get it about the fuel payments, the cap and the two-child payments and stuff, is because they are so disconnected. They don't have a clue. They don't get it. They always say every so often, we get it. If I could just make a brief allusion to a conversation you had with Barry Keefe that you mentioned quite a few times.
No, Barry Keefe was very dear to me. He's late now, sadly, yeah. But, yeah, go ahead. Of course you can.
You were working in your youth, I think it was, with That's Barry right. Keefe, who's a very, very famous playwright and screenwriter.
That's right.
And he said to you at one point, are you the guy that thinks you're James Dean? And
yeah, that's
said,
right. Yeah. You've got a good memory, I'll give you that.
Yeah. And Barry Keefe said to you, you do realise that James Dean was white. And you said, yeah, white on the outside, yeah, but black
only on the
outside.
Outside. I didn't say black on the inside, I just said only on the outside. I left it at that. You know, I was a 17-year-old. I thought I was a cocky little thing. Look, thank you for bringing up the late, great Barry Keefe, Archie. I can't thank you. Last time I saw him was only about 10 years ago, and it was in Italy, funny enough. Went to do an interview with him there. Somebody who was so dear to me, I cannot tell you how that one person, by writing a part for me in his play Killing Time, actually changed my life at the age of 17. Archie, thank you. So we've got David in Gravesend, but before that, John in Chesterfield. Hello, John.
Hello there. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you very much. I understand you're a first-time caller.
I am indeed. I'll have to listen to the tune.
Well, do you not want to?
Oh, I'm not bothered. It's okay by me.
Well, the rules are rules.
Roll yes. out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun.
Welcome to the nightclub, John. Yeah, we just do that as a way of sort of celebrating the fact that we've got another first-time caller and to welcome you okay. to the nightclub in this idiosyncratic way. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Great to have you on. Yeah, what do you want to talk about? You. Entirely up to you, John.
One of these pinch me moments back in 1997, I found myself invited to a award ceremony at the Café Royal in London.
Yes, I remember that. Which, yeah, Café Royal, eh? It's not there anymore, by the way, but anyway, yeah, go on.
It was then. And it arose out of an incident in Addis Ababa when myself and a colleague and our wives were blown up by a terrorist hand grenade.
Oh, my goodness.
And this organisation that existed to provide awards to elderly people, excuse me, I've got a cold, decided I was worthy of a gold award. And I sat next to Louise Maxwell, who was the original Miss Moneypenny in the original James Bond movie.
Oh,
and,
wow!
Next to her was the lady on whom character was based, the lady who worked with Ian Fleming in the security service, and she was the recipient of an award, as well as I was. So it was quite an occasion, to be honest with you.
Did you know who these people were in advance? Did you know them, or did you...
Not really, no. We were just given an invitation to attend, sat at a table, and then started to talk to the people around us, and lo and behold, it's Louise Maxwell next to me.
What was she like?
So
what was Miss Moneypenny?
At the end of the proceedings, we had a kiss and a cuddle. Not many people can say they've had a kiss and a cuddle Miss Moneypenny, can they?
No, not at all. I was going to say easy with the kiss and the cuddle, but I'm sure it was all gentlemanly and above board. And obviously, if it had been Ursula Andress, you know, we'd all be envious. But Miss Moneypenny, what was she like? What was she like as a person from what you
what the
tell?
Original lady? She was old and she was full of courage, really. Her and her husband, they're obviously very wealthy. They'd been coming back from some evening out in the West End, lived in Knightsbridge somewhere, got out of the Rolls Royce in the drive. There was a guy sitting on a motorbike with a pillion passenger. The pillion passenger ran up to her, grabbed her wrist and tried to pull off the Rolex that she got on her wrist. And she decided the person she was not going to give way, so she kneed him in the groin rather effectively because he let go of her and ran for the motorbike. His mate on the motorbike realised the game was up and set off and left the other one sat on his backside in the road where he was duly arrested by the police. So she, the original Miss Moneypenny, was a delightful lady who got lots of stories to tell about her work in the security service. And Louise Maxwell was charming.
Sure. Gosh, she sounds like a little bit like, you know, the late, great Diana Rigg as Emma Peel. You know,
she
wouldn't let you walk away with a Rolex in a hurry either, I imagine. I wonder, though, if the explosion that caught you in Addis Ababa wasn't a pinch yourself moment. Did you quite know understand what happened?
It was indeed, yeah. I was working as a police training advisor at the Ethiopian Police College. I'm a retired UK police officer and I'd arranged this evening out to celebrate a successful series of workshops on the arrival of my mate's wife and my wife. And I'd discovered this lovely Italian restaurant. We'd ordered a meal. We were sitting at the table, and my colleague's wife said, "Oh God, it's a bomb!" And I looked down, and a bright, shiny hand grenade arrived about 8 inches away from my legs, and I felt an overwhelming feeling of disaster. And I can't begin to say what it was like, really, because the guys must have known what they were doing. They had counted the required amount of time, because I looked down and as the hand grenade rolled to a stop, there was a puff of smoke. So it exploded virtually immediately. Reconstructing the events because it knocked me out, but I'd got shrapnel underneath my right foot. So I must have moved very quickly and moved towards my wife, who was the nearest thing to a soft landing, and fortunately got in the way because she'd seen the hand grenade explode. And in theory, she would have got the shrapnel in her face, whereas I move rather quickly. And my backside is full of shrapnel that was heading towards her face, which is a much better place for it to be, is it not?
Well, yeah, when you put it that way. I'm impressed and amazed at your sense of humour about it, because that wasn't a pleasant experience at all, was it?
No. I mean, it went on because there's no such thing as ambulances then in Ethiopia. Eventually, it happened about 7:30. I didn't get any proper treatment until about 10:30 that evening, by which time I'd lost about 50% of my blood. And at one stage, I was not allowed to go to the hospital because the police were interviewing me and they thought I might die on the way, you know. But what doesn't kill you makes you better,
stronger.
Doesn't it?
Makes it stronger, apparently.
Makes you stronger.
Wow, what a story. And thank you for sharing it with us, John. Anytime you want to call up, you know where we are. Uh-huh. You're a member of this nightclub now, and I'm sure you got some stories. When was that, by the way, in Ethiopia? When did that
happen? It was June 1996.
My goodness.
It was the incident was April 1997. Started work there in June 1996. I also worked as a police advisor in Nigeria.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And in Jamaica and in Sudan.
Oh, my goodness. Well, at least I know the Jamaican landscape as well. In Jamaica, you didn't work, there was a guy called Mark Shields. Did you know him?
I did, yeah, I knew him, yeah. He was the guy who was from the Met Police, who was appointed as a
Deputy Police Commissioner of police there yeah.
to crack the gangs.
The Yardie gangs, as it was,
the
in
Yardie
those
gangs,
days.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Mark Shields, I knew him quite well, actually. I haven't seen him in Yonks now. But, yeah, there was a exchange between the Jamaican police force or the Jamaican defence... No, the Jamaican police force and Scotland Yard. And they would send somebody over here and we'd send somebody over there. So he was Deputy Police Commissioner in Jamaica. Really interesting story, Mark Shields. We had him. We did a programme from there with him once. It was going back probably 20-something years or so, and I have very fond memories. You know, he stood out, let's put it that way, because he was about 6'3", 6'4", blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Yeah, he's your Jamaican police commissioner. What a great story, John. Let's talk again soon. David in Gravesend, you happy to wait till after the 2 o'clock news, David?
Yes.
Thank you. It'll be good to speak to you. I look forward to it in a moment or two. 0808 590 9693 is a number to call if you'd like to have Vanetta on the nightclub.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 2 o'clock. This is Charlotte Simpson. President Biden has said the United States will do everything in its power to prevent an escalation of conflict in the Middle East. Cross-border exchanges of fire between the Iranian-backed Hezbollah group in Lebanon and the Israeli military have intensified. Benjamin Netanyahu has warned Hezbollah faces more attacks unless it backs down. Speaking at a UN summit, the Israeli ambassador, Danny Dannon, insisted that Israel wanted to avoid a wider conflict.
Let me be clear. We are a peaceful nation. We do not seek war, nor do we desire it. However, we will not stand by as our people are attacked. We will use all means at hand, our determination, our innovation, and our strength to protect our people.
In a speech at the Labour Party conference, the Chancellor will promise a budget to rebuild Britain as the party comes under scrutiny on the issue of donations, including holidays and clothing. The Prime Minister has said that senior ministers will not accept gifts of clothes in the future. Baroness Hodge, who was a Labour MP for nearly 30 years, says the issue has become a distraction.
I know Keir well. He's not a Boris Johnson. He's not somebody who acts with impunity. And I think he will be as devastated as everybody else that this went wrong. But they've stopped it. And I think this is the moment that we bring forward really, really clear, strong proposals to clean up politics, to set the rules, to ensure they're properly enforced and to ensure proper accountability to the public.
New figures show fuel prices are falling faster than at any other point in 2024 so far, with the average price for petrol and diesel across forecourts nearly 7p per litre cheaper than a month ago. The drop in price, which now stands at the lowest level in almost 3 years, is being attributed to a fall in oil prices and the strength of the pound against the US dollar. Sri Lanka's presidential election has been won by the left-wing opposition candidate, Anura Kumara Dasianika. The poll, which went to a second count for the first time in Sri Lanka's history, was described as one of the country's closest. He's promised voters tough anti-corruption.